Hey everybody, this is Wade with Wade for Wireless. Now, I had some feedback when I went to give you feedback on two things. One was on the shock climber, so I'll start there. I did a story about a climber that got shocked 130 foot up, and what happened was, with a metal tape measure, you know, he was doing AGL measurements, and I guess he was close to a power line, and apparently the wind blew the tape measure into a power line. The guy got zapped enough to send him to the hospital, and his workmates had to rescue him, which thank God they were able to rescue him. And that's another blog. We'll talk about rescue techniques and practice, which I'm going to talk more about practice than techniques. The techniques you should learn in training. I mean, I can sit here and tell you how to do it, but until you do it, it's not the same as doing it. It may help that you hear something, but the best thing with rescue techniques, practice. You're going to learn it. You got to practice it. Just imagine, you know, you're playing a sport and you write a book, say on football, baseball, tennis. Then you go out and you expect to play like the pros, you know, in tennis, I would think Andre Agassi. In football, you know, like any NFL team or even any college team, you know, you think you're that good just from reading a book. Well, let me tell you something. Practice. It's a physical activity. Chances are if you're going to rescue someone, it's a stressful situation. But I'm getting off on a tangent here, and I apologize. I'm coming back. So let me just read the feedback I got on that. I got two comments from the climber that was shocked. And the first one basically comes in and with someone I know, and he says, a metal tape can be a lethal weapon when used near electrical lines. A fatal case occurred in Britain on a bridge when a supervisor was measuring how close to train wires to build a scaffold. When the tape broke, the contact with the power line below was made, and he was electrocuted. So when he says the tape broke, you know how when you use a metal tape and they break, they sort of flick down. Does that make any sense? So, you know, you're trying to measure something. All of a sudden, the tape just bent down. Bam, power lines. So guy was electrocuted. So that's one more thing. Save a life. You know, try to think about things like that ahead of time. Metal tapes are, you know, pretty dangerous. And I think awareness is going to help people. Just be aware of your surroundings. You know, I mean, if you're working near a high tension power line or any power lines, if you're working near normal power lines, they're usually insulated. But the problem with the high tension lines that are higher up, usually on the steel power towers, they're usually non-insulated. They're usually open. And a lot of times when you get near some of those towers, you know, the voltage is so high, they usually you can hear them crackle. So the last thing you want to do, obviously, is touch any of those. The only thing that might save you is if the tape measure pops like a fuse. So anyway, I got another comment, and this is a pretty good one, a little longer. I'm going to try to read it word for word, so bear with me. So the comment goes, and I quote, when is enough enough? Why should someone using a metal tape, let me start over, I screwed it up already. Why would someone be using a metal tape anymore? The company should be held accountable, and the tower climber should know better. As an owner, I try to make sure my guys and or gals know what they are doing. The industry is getting me really stressed out. I may not know 99% of the guys out there, but we all represent each other. It takes 5 minutes to walk around and make sure that everything is good and know what the hazards are. It saves 10 hours of paperwork when someone gets hurt. I know FCC, DOL, and others are trying to change things, but I don't think it will go fast enough, and too many companies are cutting corners to save a dollar. Sorry if I rambled, but I think you are the one of the few who actually understand. To many out there who don't think and would rather have a speed contest or pissing match, I am still trying to fine-tune our safety to help everyone who works for us and make things better on our side. So my response is, thank you for your concern, and he's doing something about it. You know, here's someone that's not just sitting by and complaining about the industry, you know, like me. He's actually out there training his people the right way. So, you know, one thing I've seen is a lot of people are passionate about climbers in this industry. A lot of people care Unfortunately, those people that care are usually the people that have climbers work for them. And, you know, I messed up when I was climbing. I thought all about the schedule. Now, I was fortunate. I never got hurt. I never had anyone work for me get seriously hurt. Guys cut themselves all the time. I bring that out. Stupidity still happens, myself included. You know, blades are sharp, especially when you're working with box cutters. But anyway, back to this with the serious injuries and something like this. When you're working in this industry, common sense plays a big part. Now, I know it's interesting when you look at this, and you know what? I'm having flashbacks of years ago when people were, when climbing got devalued. And what I mean by that is a lot of people said, and if you're in the industry, if you've been in the industry for any amount of time, I'll bet you heard this. Oh, we'll just find someone, some young body to climb up there for $10 or $15 an hour. That's one of the reasons I get out of the actual climbing. I'm still in wireless, still very active in it, still trying to get work done out there. But when people go in with that mentality and they think, oh, we'll just find someone to climb for $10 or $15 an hour, and I've had a lot of people say that to me. If they're listening right now, I hope they can flash back to that memory. They might deny it, but I know a lot of people said that to me. We'll just find some young guy to climb for $10 or $15 an hour. Well, now let me tell you something. Things aren't going so well for those young guys, are they? I get a little worked up over this because it's just something that I've seen in the industry, and it hurt the industry in so many ways. And I'm going to just give you a high level how it hurt the industry. One, it devalued the climber. And for anyone who thinks this is just about brawn, think again. You have to have brains, you have to have common sense, and you have to be a jack of all trades. When I say of all trades, there's a lot of trades you have to know. When you're a climber, and I'm just going to give you from my experience what I did. I not only had to figure out how to climb, how to mount, you have to figure out the azimuth on an antenna or how a cell array should be hung. You have to sit there and be able to read a map and know how to point everything. You have to be able to hook up the cabling right. You have to know how to terminate the cables. You have to know how to terminate fiber. You have to know how to terminate RF cable, coax. You have to know how to put the connector on. You have to know how to test the cable. I've done that. You have to know how to sweep the cable. Now, granted, a lot of these carriers pay special companies to come in and sweep, but I did that too. And now you have PIM. You have that passive intermodulation. You have to do testing on the cables for that. That's become a serious issue here, especially with LTE and the high speeds that we're putting through these cables. You have to know how to operate the equipment. Chances are you have to know how to put a junction box up on a tower. Chances are you have to know how to waterproof everything. Not everything is waterproof the same. It's one way for coax cables. It's another way for fiber. You have to put your breakout boxes up there. Chances are you have to run power up you have to run power cable up the tower. Then you think you're done at the end of the day? Maybe a lot of climbers are. I'd get the laptop out. I'd program up the radios. I'd do the alignment. I'd do the logs. I'd do the closeout package. I would do inspections. I would run the cable in the shelter. You know, there's a lot to this. I've hooked up generators. I've tested generators. It's just you become, like I said, a jack of all trades where you're doing so much work. And I worked for this one company, and this guy, we did a lot of public safety work. I really enjoyed working for this guy. It's just a great company. It's a very small family-owned company. But the great thing about working there was we got to do all this stuff, but he made it fun. You know, he just did. He cared about his workers. He wanted you to be safe. He got us anything we needed. But he also made it fun. I think with today's industry, when you go around with the attitude, oh, I'll just find a body for $10 or $15 an hour to go up the tower, it's not fun, and it shows you don't care. You know what I mean? I think the thing about these family-owned companies that, so these small companies, a lot of them got screwed by these larger companies, say, you know, a lot of turf vendors. I was going to name a name. I had to cut that part out. I was going off in my rant. Sorry if the audio is a little screwed up. I just didn't want to single out a company and have them get me for slander. However, I know one big company in particular where I knew a lot of people that worked, that part of their business plan was to screw these little companies out. They just wouldn't pay them. They wouldn't pay them everything. They might pay them a little bit, string them along, get them to do more work and more work and more work till they went bankrupt. Then they found somebody else. And this is all too common in the industry. So here you have these small, say, family-owned companies. You know, we call them very small companies, which are going by the wayside. You heard that MasTec bought West Tower. The deployment companies are becoming more of an industry and more larger corporations, which can be good and can be bad. It can be good in the fact that they can structure training. They can structure a lot of programs for training. They can provide, I would think, they could provide a lot of equipment for their climbers. And I would also think they could provide a steady paycheck for all the climbers. Whereas when a small company gets screwed, you know, they're digging into their family retirement to pay their climbers. And I've seen that. These people really care about their climbers. When you have a family-owned business and you have to let somebody go just because you don't have the money, because you got screwed, they worked their ass off, and now you have to let them go, it has an effect on you. So anyways, there's a lot of companies out there that care. I don't lose sight of that. Unfortunately, a lot of these companies that care and try to take care of their people, I see a lot of the climbers that just, and I wouldn't say they don't care. I would say they put their own lives at risk just to meet a schedule. I was like that. I used to always try to meet the schedule. I worked well beyond what I should have. And I see a lot of climbers working well beyond what they should have. Anyone who thinks that you go out on a tower for 2 or 3 hours, sometimes you get lucky. That's a great day when you can drive 2 or 3 hours, be up in the air for 2 or 3 hours, and then drive home 2 or 3 hours. That's only an 8 to 10 hour day. That's a good day. There aren't many days like that. A lot of times you have to drive 2 or 3 hours and you're up in the air for, say, 8 to 10 hours. Then you go to a hotel and you hope you get home Friday, maybe Saturday, maybe Sunday. You know, you'd like to get home and see your family. That's the reality of the industry. So when I see, and I've heard this, people that say, oh, well, we'll just find a body for $10 or $15 an hour, some young guy, you're missing out on a lot of things. Hey, I'm not saying about young people shouldn't do this. I'm all for that. In fact, that's how we're growing the industry. We're bringing a lot of young people in. And you saw there are grants going out to colleges now, community colleges, to train these people to do communications work. I think that's a good thing. That's the way the industry should be going. However, they're training people. In the old days, they just threw people up there. And I think training is going to become more and more important. And I'm a guy that learned in the field. Granted, I had training. And you know, I went to Comtrain for my training, but I also had OSHA training. I also had CPR training. I did a lot with the Red Cross. I'm still a fan of the Red Cross because they do train people in life-saving and I was going to say CPR, life-saving, and there's another one out there. Just drawing a blank right now. The pressure of... being on here. I don't know what's wrong with me. So, but my point is training, training, training. Then the other thing you do is practice, practice, practice. And I know you guys all know this, but I just, you know, want to drive the point home that we got to practice what we've learned. The best way to get better again is practice. I know I got off on that tangent earlier. I'll try not to do it again, but you have so many people that care in this industry. There's people that are passionate about making sure that everyone arrives alive and gets home at night. So I think it does. It breaks the hearts of these people when you have climbers out there who just don't care about themselves or their workmates. They take risks that they should not be taking. So here, I'll put a little challenge out to you. When you're out there working, when you're out there doing risk assessment at the beginning of the day, not at the end of the day, when you're at your tailgate meeting at the beginning of the day, I want you to think about not only your workmates and the job you're doing, pay attention to what you're doing, but let's say you just take a minute. Just take a minute to meditate and think about your family. Think about your parents, your spouses, your children, the people that you care about. All right? Can you picture that? Picture, it's a warm, happy thought, right? Picturing your family. Picturing everyone, you know, getting together. Think about the holidays, you know, think about Christmas and Thanksgiving. That's when a lot of people get together at these holidays. Just think of it. Isn't it great? You're there with your family. Let's say your parents are still around and you have your spouse and your kids, everyone's together. So you're all together. You're all happy. You're taking that minute. It's a warm, fuzzy thought, right? You're feeling good. Now, think about two more things. Think if you're not there. And don't picture it like you're just not there. Picture like there was an accident and you're gone. Picture that first Christmas without you. Picture what it's going to be like. Picture what everyone's going to say. Picture what your workmates are going to say and how they're going to feel. Picture what your family's going to say and how they're going to feel. Picture what, then go beyond that and picture what you're going to miss. Now, let's take that was the extreme, worse. But now, let's say you got hurt on the job. Let's say for whatever reason, You have a serious injury on the job. Now picture all those holidays where you're either laid up, you're in a hospital bed, you're in a wheelchair, you're you just can't do anything, or you're complaining because you're in a lot of pain because of the accident. Think of all those scenarios. That's why you should think about yourself. Get a little selfish when you're doing these safety assessments. Get a little selfish when you're doing hazard assessments. Get a little selfish and really want that holiday to turn out well. Really want your family gatherings to turn out well. Let me tell you something. I made a lot of mistakes in my life, and I'm very fortunate. But you are in a position to avoid those mistakes. Here you have people that care for you. You have people trying to make the industry better. Now, granted, a lot of scumbuckets out there that they're trying to screw you over. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. There's a lot of people out there that just don't care. But you know what? Here we can make a difference. We can get things done. We can work hard. We can really push our limits by doing things the way they should be done, by not taking shortcuts and by not taking unnecessary risks. There is a way to hold to that schedule by paying attention, by following a plan, by creating a plan. So I just want you to think about that. That's something to really put in the back of your head. All right, I got more feedback here. The next two, which I just realized after I put them in there, from the same guy, which he always has good feedback, so I'm not complaining. But they're both from A Story of RF Radiation Poisoning as my blogcast, like one of the first ones I did with, I think it was Bruce L. that was on it. Oh, no. Who was it? I got to look here. But anyway, I guess my point is, RF can be a hazard too. It's something we forget about. And it's something that we want to, it was Bruce L. I was right. Bruce, a great guy, super nice guy, but he got fried by radiation because he was sitting on broadcast antenna doing work, replacing a beacon. Anyone who's ever worked on a TV tower usually knows it, and I don't know how it is now with digital. The digital antennas are a lot different, but in the old days, you know, they had broadcast antennas for television were usually these huge monsters they had on top of a tower, and they looked like part of the tower. They had climbing pegs welded to them. They were actually part of the antenna. Then they would put the beacon on top of that. And for anyone who works in the carrier work, these TV antennas were huge. When I say huge, I'm not talking like, oh, it's 6 foot high. I'm talking 50 foot high, 30 foot high, 20 foot high. They were these huge monster steel structures, and they had to handle a lot of power. And they were really cool, actually. It's a mechanical, or I shouldn't say a mechanical, I'd say it's an RF marvel that they could build these things, and they could transmit so much and put so much power into them, and yet you could still climb on them. They were rugged and sturdy. So anyways, I have two comments here. One was an actual feedback, and the other one was a comment, but I'm going to read them both. So I'm going to start with the first one here. So concerning RF radiation, I thought this was a good comment. So I'll quote, I grew up around communications towers. My father owned a tower company in Nebraska. The industry has changed considerably through the last 40 years. Safety seems to be the main topic, yet it is really not enforced. OSHA has some guidelines in place, but compared to similar industries, they really don't have much of a foothold on anyone. As far as exposure to radio frequencies, they should emphasize more attention in the long-term effects on the human body and less on whether you need to be trained on how to do the job physically and mentally. It used to be an elite employment opportunity to do tower work. Now with cellular sites poked up every direction you look, everyone and their brother has tried to do the job. Don't take that to heart. What I mean is that most people never really understand what makes the cellular networks work as well as they do. Men and women give up their families to dedicate themselves to multiple weeks on the road, working some of the oddest work schedules under some of the world's most strenuous occupation ever. They seem to forget that if it wasn't for these people, the society we have would become that we have become accustomed to would never have been possible. I'm a proud guy who does HVAC work nowadays, but will always be a climber and will always remember how unique the business was and will most likely be for as long as most of us finish out this life. Say a prayer for the dedicated folks who invest their lives to assure that our communication is forever improving because of their efforts. Thanks to the ones who have been injured or have lost their lives in the industry. Without all of them, our society as we know it would not be possible. End quote. Close quotes. That's hard for me to read. Sorry, fellas. But hey, thanks for the support. I appreciate it. Now I want to get another comment. And this guy says, hey, Wade, this is great how you put together this blog and website. Thanks for the ego boost, by the way. I appreciate it. And he asked if I've ever been employed in tower work. And yeah, I did 12 years of climbing. Like I said, I was only ever on, I think, 2 or 3 a.m. towers. I think two. But I did do a lot of broadcast work, mostly TV stations. I didn't do much FM work, like as FM radio stations. But I do know their schedules were a little wacky. So that's one thing I wanted to bring up is one thing when you do broadcast work, everything's about the shows that are on, the downtime and the schedules. And they're not all the same. Like when you're working on AM towers, well, FM too, but it was mostly AM here in the East Coast. You had Rush Limbaugh, and I don't care what your opinion is about Rush. Love him, hate him, whatever. But his show was very popular on these radio stations. So on the East Coast, he was on, I believe, from noon to 3. So from noon to 3, you could not work on these towers. When I say you couldn't work on the towers, I'm not talking just whatever station's broadcasting that show. They didn't want to turn power down because of ratings. Ratings, ratings, ratings. Ratings were huge. And I get it, you know. Now, with TV, it was different. With TV, the local news was huge because they get the most revenue from that. And I think primetime, they got a lot of revenue. But I could be wrong. I think primetime, they got a lot of revenue. And it might be different now. But I still know the local news is a moneymaker for the TV station because they own that. They get to keep all the dollars for that when they advertise on that. That's why it's such a big deal. Is advertising the same as it used to be? You know, I don't know. With the internet, a lot of people like targeted advertising, same as cable. And cable started that, you know, targeted advertising. But anyway, I don't care. I don't know anything about that. So I just think it's something to think about how this work in broadcast, even though it's tower work, it's very different than, say, the carrier work. I'm sorry, off on a tangent. Hey, let me continue with what he said. I'm getting way off here. Sorry, people. And he'd love to chat with me sometime, a little more extensive about radio frequency exposure and basically anything related to the communications industry, except of course, the weathermen out there. Talk about some interesting people. It is truly amazing how many folks it takes to put a 30-minute news clip together, broadcast it, and manage everything that goes out into true broadcast before digital and during the beginning of microwave 2 gig systems. That's the real hot sticks. Oh, and larger Omni AM radio stations. I have burns on my hips from the rivets on my lineman belts that I first wore before the new style 5 and 6D ring full body harnesses. Like I always tell people, do you ever very often see or hear radio and TV stations that are not in the air? Not a common thing. 10 to 50% power is never off air. It is regulations, they say, but the FCC has never had true guidelines on how the service on a live broadcast antenna is to be performed. And there, I feel better. End quotes. So, hey, thanks for your response. I gave you some of the answers in the middle there. I'm sorry. I should have waited till the end. And the other thing I brought up, like a lot of these TV stations used to have STL links, station to transmitter links. I think they were in the 2 gig range. In the old days, they were analog. I'm sure now they're digital. And I think a lot of TV stations went with fiber. I think they run fiber between the studio and the tower. I would imagine to try to keep it underground, but they probably still have the STLs as backups. You can never have enough backups, especially in broadcast, for the reasons he said for the advertising. So, yeah, I talked about the maintenance windows. I got off on a tangent. Sorry to do that in the middle of your comment. So, anyway, hey, I got a press release. I don't know if you guys are interested, but I have it written up there in the blog. There's a private investor group. There's a bunch of I had to put it word for word because that's what they asked me to do. No, I didn't get paid to put it in there. I'm just doing it as a favor to them. But Some private investors bought two wireless companies, Recovery Logistics, LLC, and Site Resources, LLC. I don't know anything about these guys. I guess they're based out of Raleigh. And I guess one is a disaster recovery service with specific expertise in wireless telecommunications and utility industries, non-emergency routine repairs, maintenance services, upgrades, and so on. They do non-emergency probably so they don't have to be on call. That's why I would do it. I was on call for all those years. Ugh. Anyone who's been on call, you know what that's like. Tom Mix, the CEO, said they have a unique platform already in place for multiplication. Highly motivated leadership and staff have earned RLI, SRI, a proven track record. The small but strong management team needs additional expertise and capital for farther expansion. I'm excited about the key part continued growth by providing their resources. So there you go. I have some notes in there in the blog about it. So anyways, I'm going to probably put out a couple of these feedback posts just so I can get caught up. I know I try to be fair with the feedback and put it all out, unless, you know, you just give me feedback, call me a jerk. I get enough of that. So I just want you guys to remember that now that Nate has the Tower Family Foundation, they have a lot of money in there, and I can't wait to see what they're going to do with it and how they're going to take care of the people that are out there. But also you have the Hubble Foundation, and Jed Hester is doing everything she can there. I'm going to have some more information on my feedback from the FCC and Department of Labor from their workshop that they had to get together, and also on the signing of the tie wrap. And that's one of the feedback I got is on tie wrap. I saved those for another post, another episode, because that's something I want to spend a lot of time with. So, but I just want you to remember the Hubble Foundation. Now, there haven't been, thank God, there haven't been any accidents that I'm aware of other than these near, I would call them near misses, but there were injuries. You know, people are getting hurt out there. The tape measure incident, we had the water tower fall, that guy, and he, as far as I know, he's recovering. I haven't heard from his family, so I don't know what's going on, but I think they're doing all they can to make sure he's okay. I didn't hear anything about the guy that was shocked, but as far as I know, he's recovering. He's probably out of the hospital by now. Again, I'm trying to get this feedback. It's really hard to get more feedback on this. So anything you have on those stories, let me know. Feel free. If you give me comments, I try not to put anyone's name when I do the feedback or the comments in the posts, unless they ask me to. If you specifically ask me to put your name in, I'll do that. I don't have a problem with that. But I try not to do that, to be fair. And again, like I said, I have a few more things coming out and something I'm working on too, which thank you GME Supply for giving me some quotes on some on what it costs to be a climber. That's something I want to go through, the price of safety. You know what? I know we look at the training as the cost, but what about all the gear? You know, it takes a lot of gear. What about the fines and the practice and the time and things like that? I can't put it all into one post because no, the feedback I get is I think people get tired of reading like 1,500 words on all these posts. So, and I am a little long. Same as this one. I'm a little long-winded even on the podcast. But anyway, I got some good things coming up, people. And I have, I'm going to do some training here and some paperwork, like the scope of work, bill of materials, things like that. I've been working on it for a while. I just have to finish it. I've been so busy with other things. So just remember, you're out there. To all you tower crew owners, take care of your people. I know you're doing the best you can. I talk to a lot of you. There's a lot of people that have such passion and they care about them. And to all you climbers, you know, be careful, be smart, be safe, make a plan, pay attention to what you're doing. That's going to be the key ingredient here. Pay attention, be smart, be safe, pay attention. Take care, everybody. Arrive alive.